Okay. Please give me your full name.
Yeah, George Leslie Fleshman.
And you were born in Union County?
I was born out near the airport, September 7th, 1924.
Mm-hmm. What had brought your parents here?
My mother's parents came across on the covered wagon, the last organized covered wagon to come west, and that was about 1878. And
were they heading for the Willamette?
They went down to Salem, mm-hmm. and they spent the first winter there, and it's too wet and rainy, so they went back to Walla Walla and stayed a year. And then they moved into Wallowa County, which at that time was still Union County, because Mother mm-hmm. was born in 85 in Union County, and a year later it was Wallowa County. And they had a 160-acre farm just as the valley opens up going towards Faustine. That's where Mother was born. They had a sod house there. She was born in a sod house. And then she lived there till she married Dad. And Dad was born in West Virginia. And his mother was a carper, which still is a lot of carpers in Union and Wallowa County.
Is that C-A-R-P-E-R or
yeah,
P-A-R?
C-A-R-P-E-R, Carper. Mm-hmm. George Washington Carper was her father. They had about 13 kids or something. Mm-hmm. And then she married my granddad, Jimmy Fleshman, in West Virginia. And my father was the oldest of 11 children. And the Carpers decided to come to Promised Land in Wallowa County and 1896.
You mean the little town of Promise?
Yeah, little town of
yes.
Promise out there.
Yes.
Dad was 18, and so he got a homestead. Mm-hmm. And then he started teaching, and he taught 4 or 5 years. And he taught 1 year at Wallowa Country School called Liberty School, and boarded with the Willets, which was my mother's maiden name. He boarded with my grandparents.
W-I-L-L-I-T or E-T?
E.
Yeah, W-I-L-L-E-T-T. Willett.
E-T-T.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And Dad was 7 years older than Mother, but Grandmother thought he was a fine catch and saw to it that they got married. And so then the folks came out to La Grande, and there was a sawmill up at Perry,
mm-hmm.
and they lived in a little tiny house. I used to be able to see it if I came in the ground. You'd look over the edge, and I'd say, that's where my folks lived. And I don't know exact dates or things on them. Their first baby died of what we call colic now, allergic to cow's milk, mm-hmm. and they didn't know when she died, about 7 months old. And they moved back out to Dad's homestead, and lived, one of my sisters was born there. Then they came back to La Grande, and
you think the sawmill was the only thing that attracted them to La Grande?
I don't know. I would imagine it's because of the work,
mm-hmm.
and why they came back then, I just never, you know, you never talked too much to your parents. Until
would that be in the first decade of the 20th century, perhaps?
Yeah, they got married in 1903, mm-hmm. so that was the 1904,
mm-hmm.
And I know how long they stayed here. My brother was born about 7. They were living here, and then a sister who was born in 12 was born back out at Promise, but then came back out. They only lived there a short time mm-hmm. and sold the place.
But you said you were born out toward the airport.
Yeah, and then 1915 they bought 80-acre farm. Southern part of the valley was rich alfalfa land. They bought an 80-acre place. My dad and a couple of his brothers went into partnerships in an 80-cow dairy. And so I was born there in 24, but Dad had irrigated in the whole valley, that part of the valley, and the alkali came up. And they couldn't grow anything.
Tell me about the alkali coming up. I haven't heard about this.
You haven't heard about that?
No.
No, it was very, very fertile farmland. Just around Hot Lake and then north by the airport, Brojotti has a farm just north where I was born. And that whole area, it just became sagebrush, practically. Saltgrass.
Why would the irrigation do that?
Well, I'm not a scientist, but I understood the by putting water on top of there's alkali down below, and it raised up.
Bubbled up.
Mm-hmm. And the way some farmers have done is dug big ditches, drainage ditches, and then drain.
Is that still a problem in parts of the valley?
Yeah, but they have got it back into production, but never like it was. Dad was doing quite well until, 1930. We moved into Le Grand, and I went to the first grade. My birthday was on the 7th of September, which was a Labor Day. The 8th of September, I went to school. And I thought everybody went to school the day after they got to be 6 years old. And I went to Greenwood, and my school teacher was...
Why Greenwood? They weren't living nearby, were they?
Well, we moved into town on Maple Street, 2600 block of Maple Street.
Is that the north side of the tracks?
Yeah, North Maple, that side of the track.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that because houses were cheaper there?
It was rental. They knew the lady that had Mrs. Millerine. She was the mother of Darlene and Avery Millerine, who were both very musical.
Mm-hmm.
And Avery wound up as and school superintendent. They both died early of heart attacks. But her husband, who had died late 20s, had built two identical houses. And she lived in one and rented the other, so we lived in the rental. And
did they move into town specifically so you could go to school?
Oh, no. Dad turned the farm over to one of my oldest brothers to farm, and he became a farmer's insurance agent, fire, auto insurance, and he was the Union County district agent. He had two or three salesmen under him, and he came into town to be a salesman. And so Greenwood is about six blocks away,
uh-huh.
And it was a big old two-story wooden building with sawdust on the floors,
yeah.
And they had huge wood piles of 4 foot wood that they burned in the big furnace.
Mm-hmm.
And the janitor, I found out later, was named Janet Miller, Mary Jim. Well, anyway, he was probably about 6'6 or 6'7, very skinny, and we always called him Mr. Longfellow. And I thought he was the poet until I got about 7 or...
Hello, Henry Wadsworth.
Oh, what's my oldest sister, youngest sister's name?
Janice.
Maston. M-A-S. Maston, yeah, okay.
M-A-S-T.
Yeah, Mr. Maston was the janitor there.
Uh-huh.
And
besides being tall, what else do you remember about him?
That's all I remember, yeah. Him being tall and hauling in wood and stoking the furnace. But my first grade teacher, Beatrice Young, was a widow lady. And one day at show and tell, I took a tintype to school to show. And
define tintype, would you please?
Okay, tintype was the earliest days of photography. It was pictures put on tin. I don't know how they put on there. I still got over there in my desk drawer. And it was my grandparents, mother's folks. And I took it to school and I went and I showed it. And Mrs. Young said, oh, that's Tootie, which was my granddad's nickname. That's Tootie and Chady Willett, your parents, your grandparents. I said, how'd you know that? Said your father was my teacher when I was growing up in the canyon. between Minum and LeGrand, and sure enough, Dad had taught there. And she told the story of Dad. Dad was very, very religious and read the Bible all the time. And he was down by the river one Saturday walking. She was on a corral sitting there watching him. And he was reading the Bible, and he walked into the Wallowa River almost up to his knees before he realized that he'd walked into the river.
Maybe he was thinking about baptism.
Maybe he was. Maybe he was reading about
What species of religion was he involved with?
Well, it's the Christian Church, or the Disciples of Christ, we call them. They were down on Penn Street, 903 Penn. I've done a little research on it. My great-grandmother Carper joined the Christian Church in 1859 back in West Virginia, and her whole family became members of the Christian Church. They were called Camelites when they first came west, and they were supposed to be a little odd, sort of like Holy Rollers or something other. But
Camelites spelled C-A-M-E-L?
Campbell.
Campbell.
C-M-P-B-E-L-L. Campbell.
The name of some leader?
Yeah. Alexander Campbell had formed the Christian Church, and so they were called Camelites, and they were looked upon as being a little eccentric, but they weren't. And
were the Christian beliefs at that time very rigid?
Well, we couldn't play growing up. I probably went to maybe two movies in my life. The first one I ever remember going to was the story of the Dion quintuplets.
Quintuplets.
Quintuplets. And we could not play cards.
Did they think that you would be corrupted?
Yeah, it was evil to play cards. We could play flinch.
What's that?
Flinch is a game of 15 cards, and you build piles, and a kid's game. And I doubt if anybody ever you buy a deck of flinch cards.
They have numbers.
They're just numbers, 1 to 15, and I don't know how many times they do that, and you build. I don't even remember how you build it, but anyway, we could play flinch, and my brother, who became a minister, we caught him cheating once, so you could cheat it. Playing flinch as well, you could poker. And
was the reason for that name that some part of the game involved who would flinch first?
Well, if you made a mistake, you'd holler flinch, and you gave him one of your cards. You had a stack of cards, and your object was to get rid of the stack of cards. And you played them out here on the board from going from 1 up to 15, or from 15 down to 1. And when it got to be your turn, if you could build, you could. And if you didn't play where you could, somebody could holler flinch, and they'd give them one of your cards, of their cards.
What did flinch mean?
I don't know.
Usually it means do something to cause a negative reaction or surprise someone in a negative way. You know, don't flinch. Don't react too much to something that's annoying.
I never
annoying.
Thought of it.
But you don't know the connection to the game.
No, okay. It's just called a flinch.
We'll drop that then. how did these strict religious beliefs affect your behavior as a young man or young boy?
I was a virgin when I got married, and 2 years in the military.
yeah. That's quite a feat.
we lived 7 miles from town. And we always had to go to Sunday school and church, and we never got to go to movies or couldn't dance. Dad became less rigid as he got older. I know my older sisters went to balls or proms at high school. Mm-hmm. Dad was an elder in the church here for over 50 years and highly respected, taught Sunday school, superintendent. In fact, earlier days, he was a lay minister and used to preach in Wallowa County, and he taught school, but his first love was being a salesman, and he wasn't very good at that, but I was the youngest of 10 children. First baby, and then during World War II, the flu epidemic or right after, I mean, World War One, during the flu epidemic, World 1918, 1919, they had twins, and one of the twins died during the epidemic. Mm-hmm. The house we lived in out there, we still call it the ranch, had been a two-story schoolhouse, just one great big room, two stories high with it. And I don't know whether my folks had it. When they put in the east-west road, they had to move it back from the road, and it's moved back, and they built a dining room and kitchen on it, made it into a farmhouse.
Do you know what the school had been called?
I have no idea what it's called. No idea. Just that it had been one. So it was earlier than 1915 that it had been moved there. We had a big dairy farm, big dairy barn, big milk house. Our only heat was in the kitchen, was a wood stove, cook stove, and in the living room was a, or dining room, was a big potbelly stove. Folks' bedroom was downstairs, and then they had a living room. Then upstairs was one great big room that they ran wires both ways and hung blankets, made four separate little bedrooms for us kids to sleep in.
Were you living there when all nine brothers and sisters were?
Well, actually, mother raised the eight kids, cause two died as babies. Not really, because my oldest brother, who died just a year ago at age 94, started Oregon State in fall of 24, and he always said that he had to leave home to give me a bed, which was probably true.
Yes.
But then after about 1931, I can remember well, summer of 31, depression hit, and it really hit bad in all over the country. My oldest brother lost his job. He was a chemist back in Virginia, coal mines, and he lost his job, so he came west. And then my brother out on the ranch wasn't making any money, and about to lose the farm, and they had a loan on it in the farm land bank had the mortgage. So they had a conference, the older brothers and sisters, my folks, and they decided we'd go back out to the ranch. So I can remember many times the 14 people around the table. The oldest married brother, his wife went back to Enterprise where she grew up and lived there for a year until my brother got a job. Then Dwight, the one running the farm, he had couple of kids by then, so there was four in his family, and then all his other kids. They were fun days. I have nothing but good memories of growing up as a child.
Could you give one or two examples of family interactions, either indoors or outdoors, just to give a sense of what it was like to live in a large family like that at that time?
I would say it was a worth it, work ethic.
Chores for everybody?
Oh, chores.
Every day?
Yeah, every
faithfully.
Day. They had 80 cows, and Dad started butchering one cow a week and peddling the meat. So the dairy herd got smaller and smaller, but I can remember, before we moved off in 1935, the bank foreclosed, and we had to move into town, lost a place. So I would have been, I'd only been 11 years old. I can remember milking up to 7 cows a morning and night. Mother was a great gardener and big gardens and fruit trees. Us kids would go fishing with the neighbor kids or the Bates family and the Hickses. We'd go down to some sloughs and fish. I remember coming home one night just at dusk in the spring, and the chicken house was on fire, and we had 5,000 baby chicks, lost every one of them. And Dad had climbed up on the roof, poured kerosene down the chimney to clean out the chimney and burn down the chicken house. And then we turned around and built another chicken house, and they went somewhere, or cold probably, got, probably 10 apple boxes of prunes. And we spent days opening up the prunes, putting them on screens, and putting them in this chicken house, because it had a brooder there, a heating unit. And they stoked that up, burnt that down, lost it, and both the chicken house and the... But we never knew we were poor, because we always had food.
Most of which you had raised,
grown, yeah.
Bartered.
The only thing Mother had ever bought was salt and pepper and flour, probably a little sugar. Mm-hmm. But they grew everything from their garden, and fruits and the meats and chickens and all kinds mm-hmm. of chickens
and clothes, hand-me-downs, patched.
Yeah, when you had older brothers and they were hand-me-down.
Yep.
We usually always got a pair of corduroys that squeaked, you know, when you walked, squeak, 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 and a pair of shoes in the fall. And the other day somebody asked me what my favorite holiday was, and I said 4th of July, and they said, well, why don't you like Christmas? I do not remember getting a toy for Christmas. I always got clothing for Christmas. I always got a present.
Practical gifts.
Practical
sure.
gifts.
Best kind.
And so I and birthdays, I never got any gifts. I was junior in high school when Mother bought me my bicycle. And so we moved back into town.
Well, while we're still on the farm, do you recall seeing printed materials in the house or people reading?
I don't remember any. I know Bible was read a lot, but I don't remember.
Did you have forced Bible readings when everybody was to sit around and listen?
Sometimes. We'd get in spells. Sometimes that thing. Well, we're going to read the Bible clear through. But after all the chores and the work and going to bed when the chickens did, it wasn't. I went to grade school at Greenwood my first year, and they just started sight reading. And you look at a word and you said that's cat or that's dog. No phonetics, no sounding or anything. And I must have had a poor memory because I couldn't read. In second grade, was back out a school called Liberty School, which is now part of the, they moved the schoolhouse over to the Blue Mountain Grange there on the corner of Keckler and Lancaster. And it was a one-room schoolhouse, about 10, 12 kids. And my teacher for 3 years, and she's also my Sunday school teacher, was Mary B. Kale.
And K-A-L-E?
K-A-I-L, Kale. And her daughter still lives here in LeGrand, Reba Bowman, B-O-W-M-A-N. Anyway, Mrs. Kale was very, very strict disciplinarian, and she taught me how to read.
She used phonics?
To use phonics and went back to I can remember the fun of diagramming sentences. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to diagram sentences anymore.
No, and that's a controversial point.
Yeah.
I'm sort of an expert on that
yeah,
subject.
I know, but we used to do that. And I can remember the potbelly stove, and lots of times those kids have to walk 4 miles each way. Mm-hmm. And we had an old gray mare horse named Babe, and one spring we decided we'd try to ride it. You slide off of it, you couldn't get back on.
Uh-huh.
So that didn't work out very good.
Would you say that most of the learning at that level in the school was rote? Memorizing things, answering specific factual questions, not very much in analytical thinking?
I couldn't answer that.
Okay. You don't remember.
I don't remember that.
It's quite likely you wouldn't remember the teaching techniques.
No, I wouldn't know the techniques.
But back to... newspapers, magazines, books, they weren't around the house at all?
No, folks never took any magazines or newspapers.
Was that because of your father's concern that you might be corrupted?
No. I think they didn't have money to buy them.
I see.
Yeah.
Were you aware that LeGrand had a newspaper?
Yeah, I probably was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as a first grader, when we lived in town that one year, I delivered the Observer.
But you never bothered to read it?
I told you I couldn't read in the first grade. Lost the thought. Oh, I remember one event distinctly. It was when Roosevelt was elected president the first time, which would have been, what, 1932?
Mm-hmm.
So I would have been in the second grade, and there was a family near the schoolhouse named Lindsay's, and we had current events at school. And he got up that November day and held up a picture and said, "This is our new president," this picture of Franklin Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first time I even knew we had a president. But I got a real good basic education from Mrs. Cale. Then we moved back in La Grande in fall of 35 and went back to Greenwood because we lived over there on Russell Street. House still standing. And then a year later, the place was sold, and my parents bought a house on Watson Street, which now they've renamed 21st Street. And it was owned by the state of Oregon, the Veterans Affairs, because during World War I, veterans could get loans unhoused to buy houses. The price came along, and a lot of them lost their places. And the folks were paying $15 a month. The house, the 5 acres, sold for $1,700. And they were to pay $50 a month. No, not 50, $15 a month. And after about 2 or 3 years, Dad was way behind in his payment. He couldn't dig up 50 cents a day to pay payments on the house. And the state of Oregon wanted to foreclose on these people doing it. But this fellow by name of Windy Bill Wilkinson in town, his son John just died this past summer, who was a Veterans Affairs officer, and he convinced the state to refinance the loan. And so they added the unpaid payments and the interest back into it, and Dad started paying $1,750 a month. And within 2 or 3 years, the economy changed, and within a year or so, they had it paid off. It had the house is still standing there on Watson, and had a big dairy barn, which was. Find them, I don't remember now, part of a big homestead, 160-acre homestead, been cut down a lot, and that was the original farmhouse and the barn of this original homestead on the edge of town.
Is it your impression, this is a little bit to the side, but that large portions of what is now La Grande was originally homesteads?
I think so. I think it was. What's the name of the addition up here? The Chapman? Yeah, Chapman had a homestead, 160 acres. And that was all of Old Town. And
Chapman or Chaplin?
Chapman.
Chaplin?
Yeah.
There's a Chaplin addition now.
I know. The Chaplin addition and the new county building is called the Chaplin.
Yes.
The Daniel
yes.
Chaplin.
That's right.
Yeah. And you get it mixed up with Daniel's Chapel.
Yes.
And they, I think still, they'll bring ballots into the funeral parlor, and they say, we seem foolish, but we've been told to drop off our ballots here. Yeah. Oh, I didn't mention one name which should be put in there, which is very important to my history, was Dr. Joe Engel. He had been a osteopath, and he and his wife Margaret, who is also, I suppose, an osteopathic physician, delivered most of the babies in this county from the 24s, I don't know when he started, practicing, he delivered me, and he delivered several of my nephews and nieces. And he would go to the home and deliver. I was born on the ranch, Dr. Joe. And Dr. Joe always liked me. And when I came back to Grand, joined Rotary, he was a member of the Rotary Club. And he always, when he broke up housekeeping, he gave me his copy of my birth certificate that he had.
I've heard several people, including my wife, mention Dr. Joe and Margaret Engel. Could you just give a little sketch of their personalities or temperaments? How they presented themselves to people?
I didn't know Dr. Margaret too well, but my mother was a practical nurse. And during the Depression years, when someone was having a baby and they had family, she'd go and do their housekeeping and their cooking and taking care of the baby. Mm-hmm. Mother was a good practical nurse. She had home remedies, like every spring, a tablespoon of sugar and turpentine to kill the bugs we got in the winter. And if I got a rash on my arm, which I did from picking beans or something other, she'd mix up lard and sulfa, and she was a pretty good old home doctor. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she always said that Dr. Margaret may get in trouble. Was a lot smarter than Dr. Joe. And experience, a disagreeable experience I had with him was when I was working in Montgomery Wards as a 17-year-older, I got the chicken pox. My oldest sister had come home that summer with her little girl, and she came down with chicken pox. Well, I got it. And I was off work for 2 weeks. And went back to work, and the bookkeeper said, well, you get a doctor's statement, and you'll get sick pay. We have sick pay. So I went to see Dr. Joe, and he hump-humped around. He's kind of pompous. And he wrote out, yeah, you can see you definitely had sick pay. I mean, you definitely had chicken pox, but I didn't attend it. They turned down my claim, so I lost 2 weeks' wages, and I was just a little ticked at him.
Why didn't he attend you? Because you hadn't asked him?
Because you didn't go with the doctor.
I see, yes.
Yeah, my mother took care of me. Mm-hmm. All I had was plain old chicken pox. Uh-huh.
And she knew what it was.
Yeah, and she knew
what. And she knew what to do.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do.
He never went to a doctor. One thing, he never charged me for his statement, which was all right. Nowadays, they charge you $43 to fill out the form.
Yeah.
Dr. Joe and I became very good friends, and he liked me immensely, as I said. And when I was in college, his daughter Mary was in college too, and a fellow named Ross Herring, who later became his son-in-law, was in the same class. Mm-hmm. And that particular term of the five students who got straight A's, Mary and I and Ross were three of the five, and he carried that clipping around in his billfold for years, and everyone said, pulled out and said, look at this, George, here's the prettiest looking baby I ever delivered, here's my daughter, and here's my son-in-law. And then last time I saw that, his son-in-law and his daughter had gotten a divorce, and he had Ross's name crossed off. But mine was still there.
I'd like to return to the subject of religion that
yeah.
you spoke about earlier. During the time when you were becoming more aware, like when you were 10, 11, 12 years old, and then on into early and middle adolescence, what were your impressions about the, let's say, that the competitiveness or the conflicts that might have existed among various churches or denominations in this valley?
Well, I would think, I've always said that you would fire a minister if you didn't at least once a month talk against the Catholics. And we didn't think that the Mormons were even Christians. And I was raised so anti-Catholic that when I met Dorothy, I knew that the Swartz, she was Dorothy Swart, that the Swartz were Catholic. I knew her sister, I knew her grandparents, but I had never met Dorothy till a year and a half after I got out of the service. And I had my first date with Dorothy, and I said to Dad, I said, is Dorothy Catholic? And he said, I don't know, but I know the Swartzes are. And I said, I sure hope so, because I could not date her the second time. And that was true. I've done that several times on girls I meet, find out they're Catholic, and I would not date them again. But now I've mellowed and changed.
What were you hearing about why Catholics were so disreputable?
I don't know. I really don't know. They had the Pope. I've always liked ritual. I've liked formal church services, and some of my greatest religious experiences, like a couple of years ago in Norway in a huge cathedral, having communion with the violinist playing in the organ, even though it was the Church of Norway, it was an Episcopal-type church. Mainly the Pope and their allegiance to the Pope. They still have different philosophy. Our cross is a blank, a bare cross, and their cross is with Jesus still on it. And to pray to God, you go through Mary, and these little things.
Did it go to the point that people like your father would say that the Catholics were completely misguided in their beliefs and possibly even evil?
I don't think my dad ever talked against them, but the preachers would, you know, the ministers. Yeah. They thought Martin Luther King did the right thing by breaking loose from it.
Not Martin Luther, but just...
I mean Martin Luther. Not yeah. King. Yeah, no, King Martin Luther.
Yeah.
That's another story.
Right. And what about Jews?
I had no prejudice against any race.
Well, did you hear remarks or
no,
judgments
not
about
a one,
Jews?
Not a one. We had a man named Mr. Zion here who had a clothing store, and they always said he was superstitious, and that if you want to get a good deal on a suit, be there the first thing Monday morning, because he had a belief that if he made his first sale to the first customer, he'd have a good week. So you could really chew him down. But we had a few black people in LeGrand. Absolutely no feeling against them, no prejudice whatsoever. And they were just same as you and me. The Torrance family here, and Jimmy was the class president of Dorothy's class. Really fine guy, and they were good friends of mine. Mm-hmm. I never knew a Jewish person until I even had an inkling of prejudice against Jews until I was in college, and I got in the Honor Society there, a men's Honor Society, and the advisor, we had to approve new members. The school office would get the list of by grades who would qualify, and then we had to elect them into a sort of a fraternity. And this professor, who was a German by birth, talked quite a while on us being a brotherhood and be very careful of who we elect into our fraternity. And he's talking about a fellow who was Jewish. And they voted him. They voted him not to be elected because he was Jewish. And it didn't dawn on me for 6 months or so. He came back up again to be, and I don't know why, what happened, whether the professor got in trouble or something other than that. But then he was elected. But I just couldn't believe it. I could not believe it.
During your earlier years, what did you think was supposed to be wrong with the Latter-day Saints?
Well, polygamy was one of them, I guess.
Was polygamy practiced around here, as far as you knew?
I knew of one case. A fellow had three wives.
Hmm. Openly?
I don't suppose it's openly.
All in the same house?
No, he had three different houses.
Oh. How did you know about that?
Oh.
Way boys talk?
No, it was a fellow in our church that was a meter reader, and he knew this other guy. And he read the meters for this these three houses. And he was worried. He told me once about it.
And was that shocking, supposedly?
No, because I was worried it was done. He wasn't my classmate, but a good friend of mine who was Mormon, he said his grandfather had more than one wife back in Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But that certainly wasn't the common practice around here.
Oh, no, no.
So what?
No, no.
What did you and your friends think about this man who was polygamous?
I don't form any opinion on that. I just figured he was in trouble. He had had three mother-in-laws.
What torture, huh?
Yeah, what torture. Although I had the most wonderful mother-in-law. That's why I married her, because she was such a wonderful woman.
Since you came from a, as you said, a super religious family, did that have any effect on your relationships with other people your age? Did they look askance at you or wonder whether you were peculiar?
I never felt that. I had the reputation, and still do, as a very religious person. I'm an elder emeritus in my church, and I see nothing wrong with having a glass of wine, and I am aware that when I am around, not so much anymore, but when I, like a class reunion or people who know me, they are uneasy if there's any drinking going on. I can give an example of bringing home my bombardier. I was a navigator on a B-24 during the war and stationed at Boise, so I was home every other weekend. One weekend I brought him home, and he and I were downtown, said we'd pick up some girls, and three girls picked us up in a car. And he wanted to go do a little drinking. I didn't drink. And they were extremely uneasy about it. We've talked about it, laughed about it. It's been 55 years ago. But we still remember that they were extremely uneasy, thinking, there's George, you know, and he's wanting to go off to Lynn's Villa to have a drink. And what are we going to do? So I still sense that of not being quite totally accepted because of my stricter beliefs.
Do you think you were viewed perhaps as prudish?
Yeah, I'd say they would. I don't know whether people who do drink have any guilt association or not, but they shouldn't uh-huh. drink around me.
Uh-huh. Without trying to generalize too broadly, but just remembering your social experiences when you were an adolescent, you were at LeGrand High School.
Oh, then, yeah.
Right? How would you describe the attitudes that teenagers had about the usual versions of misbehavior? Whether it was sex or drinking or smoking or riding fast cars or whatever.
Yeah, my generation really wasn't into it yet. I think 2 years later in Dorothy's class, they were a little more, or maybe I've been exposed to it. To a little bit of drinking, going out and have parties and maybe trying to have sex or...
Not me.
I know you were. You're pretty more
no,
so
no,
than I am.
No, we're not getting very personally on this. What was your observation of prevailing behavior in those
categories?
Well,
I saw none of that. I saw none of it. Because I was... I would like to have been in some type of sports. But even then, during my high school years, it was walking home. We had a 4-acre truck farm. There was chickens to feed and rabbits to feed and gardens to weed and cow to milk. And I was unable to participate in those because of having chores, work to do at home.
So you were somewhat restricted in your ability to observe these things that might have been going on?
Yeah, they could have been. I never went to any parties. I never went to any dances. I did not have any close friends.
Did you hear other kids talking about what they had done or bragging? Or
No. I had always felt sensed our poorness. And when we moved in, when we went into junior high and high school, there was a clique of about 7 girls that dressed, and once a month they would dress in Scottish dresses and call themselves the Classy Lassies. I don't think Marcy Miller was one of them, but I
don't think so.
there was McPherson and there was Lumsden and Palmer girls, and I felt outside of that circle, but there was someone, particularly Ann Lumsden, whose brother was Dr. Treve Lumsden here, who accepted me as a person. And to this day, I tell her how much I appreciate her accepting me. My dad had a Model T Ford yet, with side curtains, and he'd take it to school function. Us kids would squirm down in the back so nobody'd see us. Dad, drop us off here, we'll walk on. No, we'll take you and we were ashamed of having everybody else having V8s and Dad still driving a Model T Ford.
And were you ashamed because you thought other kids might draw negative conclusions about you?
Yeah, but we were poor. And I know...
I didn't think you had any feeling of shame about being poor.
I myself didn't. But
other kids made you think maybe you should?
Yeah, I don't know. You should brought a couch, Gene.
Well, I'm not trying to get so much at your psyche as how sort of the dynamic of teenagers in the years that you were at LeGrand High School.
They were cruel. There was a family named DeFreeze that lived down the street from us on Russell Street. They had something like 14 kids. You know, I wasn't proud that I had, of 10 children. Maybe, I wouldn't say I was ashamed of it, because now, looking back and the accomplishments and the education that my brothers and sisters and accomplishments had done, I'm very proud of it. Not many people now have raised 8 kids. And as my dad said last time I talked to him, said, I might not have been too successful making money, but I was a success by having 8 wonderful children.
There was a sense, as I recall, that during the Depression, having more than 1 or 2 children was probably not a good idea. It would stretch your finances so much that it would be bad to have so many children.
And there was a stigma against large families. We felt it. We felt it at church. Another family there, they had, I think, 12. They had 12 children. Not my mother, but this other woman would not come to church on Mother's Day because they give a prize to the one with the most kids. And she was, they had that many children because they knew nothing about birth control for the pill.
That's you think it. There was a feeling that the father should have been a little more self-restrained?
Probably.
Blame it on the father, of course.
That's off the record. If you turn that off, I can tell you some stories. My brother said my folks read more books on birth control and more experts than not a one of them ever worked.
Yes.
And Dad would restrain, and after going months and months, he'd finally couldn't stand any longer, and he'd have another kid.
Uh-huh.
And they'd say, what beautiful, my family, my cousins, my aunts and uncles, they had two or three kids, you know. And they'd say, oh, what wonderful, beautiful kids they are, but poor Maggie raising all those kids.
Perhaps...
I was just going to say, I'm afraid I haven't given you much history of LeGrand.
Well, we're getting it in in some respect. I mean, the psychological aspects of growing up at certain periods in LeGrand, I think, are important aspects of history. While you were in LeGrand High School, you were studious.
Yeah.
And you were extremely busy outside of school.
At home.
No time for extracurricular activities, probably. You no doubt had significant interactions with a number of teachers and perhaps with the principal of the school.
Probably.
Do you remember enough about, well, let's say, typical days at LeGrand High School to be able to give a few details that characterize especially student-teacher relationships?
I always felt good towards my teachers. I was a good student. I got an honor roll. And one thing I wanted to be, I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to be in theater. And I was.
Now, where did that idea come from, do you suppose? What inspired that?
Well, I'm a ham, I guess.
Did you discover that you were a ham when you were in elementary school?
Oh, not necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I got into staging. I was on the stage crew for at least my sophomore, junior, and senior year. Mm-hmm. And any extracurricular time I had was building stage or lighting. And I would try out for a part. I wanted a part very badly. And the popular kids got them. And one year, probably my senior year, there was a, I don't even know what the play was, but the drama teacher came to me and said, George, you didn't try out for a part. There's one there I really think you'd fit in. So elated, I went and tried out. I still didn't get it. And later, when we were in Salem, Dorothy and I formed a little theater group and put in many, many, many plays.
Good.
But I was very quiet, very bashful. Some of my teachers, like Harold Hoyt, a very handsome man, was a math teacher. And he and I had a very, very good relationship together. And I had planned on, if the war had come along, I'd probably gone on to college and become a math teacher. Now, when I got out of the service, I was pretty mixed up and confused. My brother, older brother, had been a minister, and he wanted me to be a minister, and I did not feel qualified to become a minister. And during the war, 1943, he died suddenly of a heart attack. I felt responsible that I should go ahead and continue his work, but I was not that type of a public speaker or the dedication that he had. So when I got out of service, I didn't know what to do. And I went to college here because I had the GI Bill, and I said to one of the girls who knew me real well, who was helping with registration, what'll I take? He said, what do you want to be? I said, I don't know. He said, well, you worked at Ward's. Do you want to like that? We got business course here. Why don't you take a business course? So I signed up and took a business course. And so then I got into heavy accounting, and I discovered my senior year that I did not like accounting all that well. There was other things to do besides work on figures. I liked people. I wanted to be a people business. So my whole career was in public service of the employment division, getting jobs for people, and then the Social Security office, people during their critical periods of death and disability and retirement. I enjoyed my work very much. And I felt I accomplished a lot more for humanity qualified pit for a preacher.
Did you think that at LeGrand High School it was possible with almost all of the teachers to have a fairly close and meaningful relationship if you sought it?
Yeah, I had, there were some grumpy ones. Miss Tickleback, we called, what did we call her? Tickle Belly. I know you didn't.
Many teachers get unflattering names among the kids, I know that.
I loved shop, and we had a teacher named Floyd Fleming for my first 3 years. I took shop 4 years, and I was one of his pets, one of his favorite students, and he taught me much, electrical wiring, window glazing. I'm a good window glazer. I can lay bricks, and plumbing, carpentry work, anything to do with the building. I could build my own house. Interim Bridge, I've remodeled two houses over completely, and
this was all based on what you learned in high school?
What I all learned in high school there, yeah.
Was it called shop and not manual training?
Well, it was manual training. We just called it shop. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this would have been, you know, in the early 40s, and he said he wouldn't let us use shop electrical tools. He wouldn't let us use the power saw. We could not use a table saw because he said, for the first year, you guys got to learn how to use a handsaw. You're going to get married, you're going to be husbands, and you're going to have to do all this repair work around the house. So I'm going to teach you how to use all the basic tools, and you won't have any money to buy these things. And so his strict rule, we didn't touch any electrical equipment until the second year.
Was the shop in LeGrand High School well equipped?
It was very well equipped.
They had all those power tools then?
Yeah, they had the bandsaw and the table saw and the lathe. Mm-hmm. And he even tried to start teach us how to cut hair. Mm-hmm. Be barbers, and the barbers union shut him down in about 10 seconds.
Yes. Between, well, while you were working, or while you were going to LeGrand High School, you were working part-time, at least during the school year,
yeah,
at Montgomery Ward.
Yeah.
How did you get out of the farm duties to do that?
Oh, the store closed at 5:30, you know, and in the summer months would be evenings, and
yeah.
I'd still be doing chores, you know.
Well, did you work at the store between, say, 3 or 3:30 and 5:30?
Yeah, I'd only put in, I think they'd let us off two periods.
Oh.
Yeah. So I had to drop some of the classes I were taking. Mm-hmm. I couldn't take some, but I got credit for two periods for this working. And we had what called industrial training class. And we'd have a class on how to be a business person.
Tell me what you did at Montgomery Ward during those high school years.
That I already did.
Not on tape.
Oh, not on tape. Yeah, I started out sort of a janitor and worked in the stock room of opening incoming freight, marking freight. Then I got doing display work. And they would every month have a sale, and you put up big cardboard signs and hang them banners from the posts and started putting up all the displays for any sales. Then I worked my way into doing glass work. They had elaborate bins like for screws or dishes or anything like that that have high rise, probably foot wide glass and come 3 foot lengths, and you'd cut them and you had different clamps to clamp together. You make quite superstructures and fancy ones. And so I learned how to cut glass real well. And then worked my way on up to do the window displays and had the mannequins and dress them and spent a lot of time in the...
What kind of supervision for that kind of work did you have?
We would get pictures from Chicago out of Chicago, as what a display would be. And I'd go up to the women's, if it put in women's clothing, I'd go up there and talk to the department head there. They'd give me the clothing, I'd take it and put it on. And
did this include things like brassieres and panties?
Oh, probably. And there'd be a variety of men's clothing, hardware, you'd have a paint display.
Okay, so you just followed the pictures then?
Yeah, mainly. And then the...
It wasn't very difficult.
Then the manager would... Oh, there was a little artistic. I have a pretty good sense of composition. The manager then would, give me a suggestion, look it over, approve it.
Did you have to arrange the lighting on these mannequins too?
Yeah. There would be the spotlights and the lighting.
Mm-hmm.
And
when you finished dressing a window, did you go outside and have a look at it?
Oh, yeah. You go out several times.
Were you self-critical?
Probably was, yeah.
Did you go back in and make changes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I always thought I did a nice job of doing it.
Did you get any compliments from customers? Or they didn't know you did it, probably?
They probably didn't know I did. Yeah. And then they would hire maybe an extra person, because I was more busy doing that than it was the display inside. And so I was actually over that other person and have them as be my helper.
Some men would say that's effeminate work. Did you feel